Though you haven't really seen them. Oh, I went live.
You're alive now.
See, that's what I was saying. I don't have control over that.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Kevin Ford of Magenic.
Afternoon. Afternoon. Welcome. My name is Kevin Ford. I'm the mobile practice lead at Magenic Technologies. In Magenic parlance, being a practice lead generally means that you're old. And I'm sure that a lot of my colleagues will use more flowery language. They'll say they're well experienced and they know their technology stacks, but generally it just means that we're old. But being old is not necessarily bad. Being old means that I do more stuff like I did when I was a kid. And when I was a kid, I always wanted to know how stuff worked. And so I'd be taking stuff apart throughout the house. And then I'd put it back together because I wanted to know how it worked. And probably those extra parts that were left over weren't important. Normally they weren't. But I got to know how things worked. And as I became an adult, when I start doing coding, I also want to know how things work. There are a lot of options in the project properties around doing builds and configuration. And many of them are, to put it, not to find a point on it, sketchily documented. Sketchily documented. And so I want to know how these work. I want to know when I do a debug build and going through that cycle, what's the most efficient way to set those settings so that I don't have to spend all day compiling my code. Those are types of things that I want to know. All right. So here's your typical Xamarin developer, right? So it's the whole monkey theme. And being a monkey isn't necessarily bad. You write code, you go out and Stack Overflow, you find out how to solve problems, but you really want to be a smart monkey. You want to understand how things work. Because if you understand how things work, you can actually start making associations and figure out how to do things better. So I like to know how things work. So I'll sit there with a stopwatch, time out different build settings, change one, time it out again, change another one, time it out again, to find out which one is most efficient, because that's what I like to do. And what else am I going to do with my day, really? All right, so this is what we're going to cover today. First thing we're going to cover is that entire change code, build, deploy, check to see how it worked, go back, change code, build, deploy, cycle of debugging, and see what the best options are that you can set up in your project to do that in the most efficient way possible. We're also going to take a look at linking. So linking seems pretty easy, right? You're just trying to make the size of your compilation a little smaller. You want to make your APK smaller. And there's three options, and they seem like they're pretty simple. One of them doesn't do what you may think it does, at least it didn't for me. And if you're writing any kind of public library or contributing to one, you probably want to pay a little attention to this because there's something in there you can do to make the lives of the people who use your library much, much easier. We're also going to look at the garbage collector just a little bit, just a little bit. I did a presentation on optimizing Xamarin for Android and iOS at Visual Studio Live. And I got into the garbage collector maybe this much. And I've got 45 minutes today and a lot to cover, so we're going to cover the garbage collector like this much, because we got like no time for that. But there's some interesting options that you can set on there where you can control the garbage collector through your build options. So I'm going to touch on those. All right. We're also going to take a look at how to make it so people can't easily see your code. So if you're doing any kind of Xamarin work on Android, and you just create an APK and put it out in the store, chances are people can see all your code really, really easily unless you have set particular build options. And we'll take a look at that. Take a look at signing. Once again, this is an Android thing. Very easy to do in Xamarin Studio. Not quite so easy to do in Visual Studio. Just take a couple minutes to take a peek at that. Finally, we'll take a look at some of the release options that are available to us and what you might want to do for project settings in a release that are different than what you do for debug. All right. I love this comic. I put it up here. The reality is I really do not want to spend all day compiling. It makes it look like we can just goof off all day. Goofing off all day is not a great idea. I don't know about you guys, but I'm a bit of a workaholic, so I usually spend about 60 hours a week working. And if I spend a lot of time compiling, that means that's just more time I spend working. Now, you may think to yourself, well, if the compile takes a couple, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, you can go and check your email. All right, I've tried that. The reality of going in to check your email means I go, I switch applications to email, and about 25 minutes later, I realize I was compiling. All right, and I've just wasted 20, 25 minutes. I can't context switch like that. So I want to make my compilation process go very, very quickly. So you have to think a little bit like a scientist and try to figure out where your time is being sent in the compilation process, because you don't always know exactly where it is. The build output gives you a little bit of clue, but you don't have a super great idea. You have to infer it. So it might be spent, for example, doing the actual compilation. That's part of it, but it's not all of it. It also does that linking process potentially, right? So that takes a little bit of time. Is your time being spent there? Is it being spent dealing with the packaging issue? If you're going out to a physical device in particular, is your time being spent sending your APK over a USB cable? The reality is it all depends. It all depends exactly on what you're doing and what the situation is, on which one of those is most efficient. So here we go, Android. The most efficient options that you can set for debug that entire cycle of change some code, compile, deploy, check what happened, start over again, rinse and repeat. It's reasonably simple for the Android platform, much simpler than it is on iOS. And these are it. I'm going to talk about these for a couple of minutes, right? So no linking. This may seem counterintuitive. We talked about the fact that you actually have to, at least going to a physical device, deploy that thing over a USB cable. So it might be intuitive that the smaller that thing is, the quicker it'll go over the USB cable. And you're probably right, except for it interferes with some of the other options we got up here, one of them in particular. The other one you want to look at is shared runtime. So what shared runtime allows you to do is it's basically a shared mono runtime, and all your applications can use it, and it doesn't have to redeploy it. It's also required for fast deployment. And fast deployment is similar to the incremental builds on the iOS side. And so what happens is the first time you do a build under fast deployment, it'll take a little longer. But if you keep on going through that change, build, deploy, debug cycle, every time after that, it will be much, much, much quicker. Much quicker. And by the way, if you have anything set other than no linking with that fast deployment setting, it will take forever. It will take forever. It wants it to be no linking. If you want to sit there and try it with a stopwatch, you will see exactly what happens when you turn on any linking with that fast deployment turned on. It takes quite a long time. Obviously, enable developer instrumentation because you want to debug. That's the whole point of this. Seriously, that's all you want to do. Those. That's it. All right. Why is that it? Because the other options aren't just a little bit slower, they're substantially slower. Substantially slower. Now, there is actually about a 15% advantage on the emulator side if you deploy to the emulators instead of an actual physical device. This isn't a huge amount. And probably that has to do with the actual fact that on one, the emulator, you're just deploying over the machine bus, and on the other, you're going over that USB cable. Having said that, I prefer to use physical devices. Given the fact that it's not a huge amount of time that's different, maybe a second or two, I tend to use physical devices on Android. For all you Visual Studio lovers, we got some good news there. Same if you're in Xamarin Studio. They're about the same. They're about the same for Android. iOS, not quite the same story. In fact, iOS is quite a bit more complex. So iOS, I've actually divided it up into two sections, the simulator and physical devices. Simulator has a similar set to Android. So no linking, incremental builds, optimized pings. Optimized pings I normally turn on by default. It doesn't have a huge impact on the compilation process. It actually compresses some of those PNG files. Have to turn off linking again with incremental builds for the same reason you do on Android. If you turn it on, things will go very slow for you. But not as necessarily as slow as putting it on a device. So let's talk about what I mean by that. So there it is for a device. And it's a little different because I've got that linker setting and I got a bunch of question marks there. And why do I have a bunch of question marks there, you might ask? And the reason is if you're actually going to deploy onto a physical iOS device, you've got to go through the AOT compilation. And the AOT compilation takes a long time. And the less code that you can put through that AOT compilation, the better off you are. So there's a trade-off here. If you turn on any linking, it's going to really mess with the incremental build setting. However, as soon as you turn on linking, it will link away substantial portions of code, potentially, before AOT, and making the AOT process quite a bit faster. So what linking setting, if you're going to go to a physical device, is best for you? Well, it depends. You're probably going to have to experiment a bit. All right. Profiling, not a really big impact. Turn it on, turn it off. It's not going to impact that at all, at least not substantially. Now, this might be bad news for you if you love to use physical devices. And once again, I said that I love to use physical devices, so it's bad news for me. So deploying out to a physical device, because you have to do that full AOT compile and signing, takes a long time. And so if you're doing code, and let's just say you're creating a new view or a new screen, and you want to change a couple things, see how it looks, and then start adjusting and keep on going back and forth. Well, granted, assuming you don't have awesome tools, which Xamarin seems to be coming out with today, but if you're doing a lot of adjustment of that type of work, you might want to do it on the simulator. Sometimes you have no choice but to go to a physical device, and indeed, sometimes you definitely will want to go to a physical device, because stuff that works in the simulator doesn't actually work on real devices. So occasionally you'll have to, but if you're doing minor code fixes, you might want to do it on the simulator just because it's so much faster. Also, got some bad news for you if you're a Visual Studio guy, which I am. Visual Studio is substantially slower than Xamarin Studio on the Mac. And so when I did my testing, I had Visual Studios running in parallel on this MacBook Pro right here. It's probably about as efficient a combination as you're going to get because it's going over all the device's internal bus. The fact of the matter is Xamarin Studio is in OS X, and all of the compilation of your iOS apps has to happen in OS X. Visual Studio has to do some kind of translation over basically the bridge to get it onto OS X. Has a big impact. Stinks. I love Visual Studio still. I'm going to work on it because I'm super stubborn. I still love Visual Studio. But there is an impact of it. All right. There we go, linking. Talked a little bit about linking. There's three options. No linking is pretty simple. That means that it's not going to try to remove any of your code it thinks is unused. Then there's one called link SDKs only. And so, who here thinks that that just removes the Xamarin code? Nobody's going to take me up on this, right? Got no takers? So when you read that, when you read link SDKs only, I thought it just got rid of the mono SDK parts of it that it thought were not being used. And that's partially right. The reality is that setting, what it actually does is it removes any code out of any assemblies that are marked as safe for linking. So if you have a third-party assembly that's marked as safe for linking, it gets linked out based on that setting. The third setting is basically link anything anywhere, and what it's really saying is link the stuff you don't know is safe. So any code that's marked as safe will get out on that link SDKs only setting, which I did not actually know until I started playing with it. You guys are probably all smarter than I am in that part, but I didn't realize it because I trusted the prompt. The prompt sounded like it was just the mono SDK. It's not. All right, so why do you want to do linking? This is an application I wrote for my vote, and it's an application that we use in VS Live. And with no linking turned on, it's 73.18 megabytes. It's huge, huge. You turn on that link SDK, it drops under half of the size, right? 31.3. And that's where it gets rid of the mono SDK and what's called safe libraries. These are things marked safe for linking. And if you link all, it'll start grabbing your own code and is not marked as safe, and any unsafe third-party libraries. It's really something you want to think about doing, particularly if you're doing anything live. You guys know a lot of this probably, but what you may not know, as I said, is that bit around the link SDKs only. So there's basically three ways you can handle linking. I'll go over them quickly. One is attributes and code. So this is how you mark an assembly as being safe for linking. So you can put attributes in your own code to handle this. Obviously, you can't grab other people's code and start dropping attributes in, but for your code, you can. However, other people's code, you can just reference stuff that you want the linker to keep around. And this is used by a lot of third-party libraries. If you look at MVVM Cross, for example, or the Xamarin Forms Labs project, this is what they use. Third option, actually, in the project properties, you can do something called link skipping. And this is kind of the last resort. If you have some assembly out there, and when you turn on linking, it pulls out parts of that, and your app breaks while you're running it, because that's how it manifests. Your app will break while you're running it. You can go in and say, hey, this assembly right here, just do not try to link it at all. Just ignore it. Leave everything in place. So that's your third option. That's kind of the nuclear option. So attributes are easy. At least you might think they are. So if you're a library developer, these attributes, which is two of them you care about, which is preserve and linker safe, can be used in an Android DLL, an iOS DLL, or in a PCL. And you might say, well, how can you use them in a PCL? Because those attributes are Xamarin attributes. And of course, the PCL doesn't understand any of that. Well, the reality is you can just define the attributes right in the code inside your project, and it looks for them by name. Right? So it doesn't, as long as you define them by name, it will use them. So in this particular case, these are the two you want to use. This assembly linker safe, that's what you want to put in your assembly. And as soon as that's in there, it will think that assembly is safe for linking. And that link SDK setting will try to link stuff away that it thinks isn't used. So you might ask yourself, well, how do I make some classes that I want to hang around? And that's where that preserve attribute comes in. So I've got a class in here that I want to keep around, at least parts of it. And so I decorate the class with this preserve attribute. And there's a couple ways you can decorate it. That one I'm saying is conditional. What conditional means is it will go through, and on anything public in there, whether it will look to see if it's decorated with the preserve attribute. If it's decorated, it will always keep it. And if it's not decorated, it will link it away if it thinks nothing's using it. If something's using it, it won't link it away. You can also write on the preserve attribute, you could tell it basically to preserve everything inside the class, and that just says keep the whole class around. So that's one way you can do it. If you're a library developer, people will be happy if you do this, because then they can use the link SDKs only instead of trying to unsafe stuff. As soon as you start linking the unsafe stuff, then you have to really start testing your app to make sure you didn't break it when it runs somewhere. And like I said, that'll manifest itself not at compile time, but instead when your app crashes somewhere in the middle of it, to be determined. So the second way I talked about is referencing stuff directly in code. MVVM Cross uses this. If you've ever used MVVM Cross, anybody here use that, MVVM Cross? A couple of you? You ever noticed a file that it sometimes drops in your project called linker please include? That's what this is, right? So what they're doing is they drop a file in there. It's a public class with a bunch of public methods. And really what it's doing is it's putting references to stuff that it wants to stay around so the linker can't get rid of it, because now it's in your project and your project says it's using it. So that's another way that you can keep stuff around so the linker won't take it away from you. All right. The third way is you can go into the project properties. And this is actually a screenshot of Visual Studio and Xamarin Studio on an Android project. And right down there where it says skip linking assemblies, you can put in the name of the assembly. The name of the assembly is almost always by convention the file name, and you just pull off the .dll bit. And you just drop it in there. And then, that, like I said, that's the nuclear option. The linker will just ignore that assembly. iOS, the syntax is a little different. It's in the mtouch arguments, and you do dash dash link skip equal, and then that same assembly name. But it works exactly the same otherwise. All right, garbage collector. Like I said, I'm just going to touch on this a little bit. As you probably know, there's a garbage collector in Mono. If you're dealing with Android, you're actually dealing with two garbage collectors. So you're dealing with the managed garbage collector in Mono, and you're dealing with the underlying Java garbage collector on the Android system. And then you have a concept called of peer objects. I don't know if you've ever heard of these before, but a peer object is any object that somewhere inherits some Java lang obj, or a Java lang object. And basically, when you have a peer object, there's two halves of it. There's a half of it that exists in the Java subsystem that's controlled by the Java garbage collector. And then there's the part that's the managed object that's in Mono, and that's in your code. That's the part you see. So interestingly enough, there's all kinds of stuff around garbage collection. You have to understand how it works under the hood. Otherwise, it can be the source of huge memory leaks. iOS works a little different. There's technically only one garbage collector, which is the Mono one. But under the hood, if you have a peer object, you have reference counting. And what happens is when the managed garbage collector runs, it sees that the reference of the native object has dropped down to zero and disappears and is unallocated. And if it does, then it can actually unallocate the other side, which is the managed side. And if it doesn't, it has to keep it around, which is all very complex and esoteric. But it's interesting and I think important to know and understand because it's a source of a lot of memory leaks. Now, there are a couple of garbage collectors that Xamarin has gone through. Currently, they're on one called SGen, which is a generational garbage collector. This is the one that they say you should be using pretty much all the time now. In Visual Studio, at least in the iOS projects, if I recall, there is a way still to change it. It defaults to SGen. Generally, you don't ever want to change it. So what is a generational garbage collector? So a generational garbage collector is a garbage collector that's been optimized to lower the amount of time you spend in garbage collection. And let me do just a quick explanation on how it does that, because there's some options you can do to play with that are in your build settings. So we have to just have a baseline of how this works. So there's two types of collections that the garbage collector does. It does major collections and minor collections. Minor collections happen on stuff that's in what's called the nursery. So when you create a new object, generally it goes into the nursery. Unless it's really big. If it's really big, it goes into the large object space and it's handled differently. And the other area is the major heap, or what's called old generations. And if your object goes through a minor collection from the nursery and it's still in use, so it can't be released, it actually gets moved into the major heap, or old generations. When I say moved, really this is a categorization, right? This is how the garbage collector is thinking about it. The major heap and large object space, those all go away and are released based on major collections. Major collections take a long time compared to a minor collection. A major collection, in some cases, extreme cases, can take up to a second, which is forever. And so why is this important? Well, while garbage collection is happening, it stops the world. And what I mean by stop the world is your entire app freezes while it's doing garbage collection. And there's a reason for that. So the garbage collector needs a consistent state and understanding of the application's memory to run. If you're sitting there allocating objects from underneath it, it can't do its thing. So it actually is basically stopping your app. You don't normally notice this, but it can happen. And that's why you want to do everything that you possibly can and release in a minor collection, because that will have the least impact on your app. All right. So this is probably self-evident, but the more you allocate, the more minor garbage collections you have. Because the quicker you allocate it, you're going to fill up that nursery. As soon as you fill up that nursery, it's going to kick off a minor collection and either release those objects or move them into old generations of the major heap. So this is kind of a graphical representation of what's happening here. These are really the categories of the nursery in the old generations. Once again, this isn't actually moving stuff around. It's really showing the categories. So I have the nursery, and my nursery's empty. So I allocate some objects. And they go down, they get allocated, and wham, bam, my nursery is filled up. So now we get a minor collection. It comes along, it tries to release stuff. Object A releases, great, so it's gone. Object B finds out it's still in use, so it recategorizes that as part of old generations. And object C gets rid of, and now my nursery is empty. That's great, except for object B there, you just have to realize that that's only going away now via a major collection. Right? Minor collections won't get that anymore. So why do you care about that? So you can play with some of these parameters. And the first one, or the most important one that you can play with, is the nursery size. And so by default, the nursery size is about 4 megs. And if you actually have a piece of code where you're dealing with a large collection, where you're doing a large allocation for a certain amount of time and then releasing it, and you know that allocation is going to be larger than 4 megs, you might want to increase the nursery size, do a minor collection to clean out the nursery beforehand, do your operation, allocate all that memory, and then let it go via a minor collection out of the nursery. Because if you don't do that, what's going to end up happening is somewhere about halfway through or wherever it hits where the nursery is filled, where you're allocating those objects, it's going to go through and do a garbage collection. And once it does that garbage collection, the minor one, it'll find they're all in use and move them all into old generations. And then the only time you're getting rid of them after that is via a major collection. So that's what the nursery size parameter does. So you can play with that. Another one is something called the soft heap limit. And I know this is crazy sounding, but really all it is it's a target size of your application. You can set a target memory size of your application. If your application starts using more memory than that, it will internally tune to do more garbage collection. And if you're under this limit, it will do less. Evacuation threshold. This is a number from 0 to 100. The default is 66. And what this is doing, memory is arranged in blocks. And what it's looking for is if you have a block where objects are released in it that goes under this threshold as a percent, it will actually take and move all that memory in use and push it up so that it's all contiguous. And the reason to do that is so your memory doesn't get fragmented, which also will slow down your app. So you can play with that threshold and how often that happens. And the final one we'll look at is something called the bridge implementation. Remember I talked about a couple slides ago about on Android, there's this bridge between native and pure objects. Well, there's actually three implementations of the bridge. There's old, new, and one called Tarjan. The new, obviously, is the same algorithm as the old. It's been somewhat improved. Tarjan uses a different algorithm. If you're finding your app is having a lot of problems where it's pausing due to garbage collection, you might want to play with this bridge implementation attribute and see if changing that and what the algorithm it's using actually makes your app no longer experience some of that delay in garbage collection. Normally, you probably wouldn't start playing with that unless you're already noticing a problem of pausing in your app due to garbage collection. All right. Android. So if you take an Android APK, it's really just a compressed file, and open it up, there's a directory in there. And if you go into that directory, you can see all your compiled .NET DLLs. And if you care about keeping your logic proprietary and people out in the public not being able to see what your logic is, let's just say you're writing an enterprise app and you think your logic is proprietary, that may be a problem for you, right? Everybody heard of .peek? I'm sure you guys have. You can just open up all those assemblies, see what all the code is. That if you have that situation, that may stink. That may stink. But there's ways around it. There's ways around it. So on Android, where this is really an issue, there's a build tool and an option called Embed Assemblies in Native Code. And when you select this, all that .NET DLLs, they'll disappear. And that'll all be transmitted into native code. It becomes an SO file. If you actually open this thing up in like a text editor, it's a bunch of binary goo. If you really care about people not easily being able to see what your logic is, you need this option to be turned on. All right. There's also something called ProGuard. This is an Android option. It basically minimizes the Android code, which is the Java code. This one's not as important as embed native assemblies, but you should probably turn it on as well. I just want to say this, just to be clear, it's only going to slow down somebody. You're not going to stop anybody from being able to pull apart your binaries and machine editor, basically machine language editors. There was a great presentation at Evolve in 2014, and I think they did it in this one called Think Like a Hacker, where this guy took a native iOS binary that's all machine code, and what he did with this thing was both humorous and scary at the same time. So this will basically put you in the same shape as he was dealing with that iOS binary. But having said that, he was still able to get at it, so be aware of that. So I just want to say one more thing about this. This, the embed assemblies in native code, requires MSDN Universal subscription now. Used to be the enterprise one, now it's MSDN Universal, at least on your build machine. Because remember, probably the only time you're going to be using this is that actual build that you're putting in the store, right? The actual build going out to the public, not in your debug builds. All right, so what if you don't have it? If you don't have it, there's a couple things you can do. You can actually obfuscate your .NET DLLs. You don't have to panic about it. There's tools you can do it. If you start searching on the internet, you'll find people who talk about how to insert this part into your build process and use the .NET DLL obfuscation. And yeah, or just purchase MSDN Enterprise. Seriously, guys, your time is worth money. I'm just telling you this, just best advice I can give you, get on your build machine MSDN Enterprise if this is an issue for you. You can do these kinds of things. It's going to take you a lot of time to get that all set up and probably a lot of headaches too, but possible. iOS, it's easy. It's all AOT compiled. It's all machine code. You can't actually find a .NET DLL embedded in the IPA that you can pull out and look at. Once again, on iOS, even then, it's just like a native iOS app. That's only going to slow somebody down. If they have access to your IPA, they can start looking at it, machine code, and do all kinds of crazy, scary stuff with it. If you need to do more than that, there's third-party firms that can help with trying to obfuscate further your code and basically do things to make it harder for hackers to see what's going on. Quick thing on signing. So who uses Xamarin Studio here? Who are my Xamarin Studio people? For Android as well? Yep, so this is easy for you, right? So in Xamarin Studio, there's this build option right in there in the project where you can go, hey, sign the APK file using the following key store, and you put in your password and all that. It's really easy. You can put it as part of your build process. It happens automatically, and all is well. If you love to use Visual Studio like I do, that option is nowhere to be found in your project properties. Nowhere to be found in your project properties. Luckily, it still works. It still works, assuming you're willing to go in and modify your project file. So I'm going to show you this. If you actually open that thing up in Xamarin Studio and look at the actual text in there, you will find this in there. And you can just go into your project file and edit it directly and set that the same way inside the proper build configuration for your release build, and it will do the automatic signing. All right. You guys like that? You know, I'm actually going to make it through my slides. I'm pretty happy. Is that the same thing I'm realizing? I'm looking at the clock going, yeah, I'm going to laugh faster. All right. So doing releases, you probably want to do something a little different when you're doing releases. I normally try to link out as much code as possible, and I'm normally pulling in a whole bunch of third-party assemblies that aren't marked as safe for linking, but I try to link those away too. It can have a pretty big impact on your size of the actual application that you're putting out there. Having said that, that gets into all the problems that I talked about where you might have to do a lot of extra QA to make sure that you didn't just break your app by doing that. But it's something definitely I test for. The other thing I do is, of course, is embed assemblies in native code. That's what we talked about. That gets rid of all those nasty .NET assemblies that are deployed out with your application. ProGuard is what we also talked about, where it actually minimizes and compresses the Java code that may be created and obfuscates it. Now, there are some other enterprise features that are in preview, which is enable ahead of time compilation and the LVM optimizing compiler. If you look on the Xamarin site right now, they say, hey, this is a preview. Yeah, maybe you might not want to use it in a production app. So I take the word on that. But it's something to keep your eye on, that maybe in the future that will be something that we do all the time. The purpose behind both of those settings is to make it so your app will run somewhat faster. Having said that, some of them, and the LVM optimizing compiler in particular, will really slow down the build times. But since this is a release build, you probably don't care about that, right? It's really that debug build cycle where it has to be fast. If your release to build takes 5 minutes to run, who cares, right? The other thing you might want to look at is something called the supported ABIs. And what this is the actual processors that it's targeting. So if you look in there, you can actually play with this setting. And depending on which one of those processor settings you choose, will determine what devices your app can run on, right? But also determine the size of your APK. So the more, basically, ABIs you choose, the more device platforms you choose on it, the bigger your APK will get. So there's some other things in there that you might want to just think about, and I'm going to go over a couple of them really quick. Multidex is one that you won't actually encounter unless you need it. So let me tell you what I mean by that. Multidex is basically there's a limit in the Java world when you're compiling for an Android app of the amount of references that it can have. It's around 65,000K. And if you go over that limit, you have to enable multidex. And you'll get the problem will happen at compile time. You'll get a big error, and it'll die on you. And you can turn on multidex. The problem with multidex is there is native handling for it on the platforms. If you're dealing with Lollipop and above, and below that, there's degraded handling through a library. So I try to stay away from needing to enable multidex. If I ran into that compile error where it says I was using more than that 65,000K of references, I try to be a little more aggressive in my linking, getting rid of unused code, and things of that nature to try to stop me from even needing that thing in the first place. There's also one called generate one package, basically one APK per ABI. So if you remember, the ABI is the processor types. So you can actually set it so it will create one APK for that, which of course makes the APK much, much, much smaller. Google, if you read their guidance on this, they say generally don't do this unless your APK size goes north of about 100 megs. And then you want to start thinking about splitting it out. Internationalization, if you need it. Java heap size, this one's also interesting. So what this actually is referring to is the size of the Java heap that's being used during the compilation process. And how this will manifest itself is you'll be doing the compile in your app, and you will have a large app if this is a problem, and the compile will fail halfway through, and it will complain about running out of memory. And so if this happens, you can actually go in, and there's a setting where you can increase the heap size. That will give it more memory for that compilation process, and you can compile. All right. Stuff that should be shut off, I'm going to skip over the uncompressed resource extensions and get to iOS while I still have some time. So iOS, very similar. Once again, use the linker like crazy. LVM, optimizing compiler, always. Once again, once you turn that on, that will bring the build to a crawl. It will take forever, but it's well worth it. Your app will run faster. I always turn that on. Strip native debug symbols. You probably don't need those. Once again, I always optimize the ping images. And once again, look at the supported architectures, right? And what your supported architectures are will determine what iOS devices you can run on. Obviously, the more you support, the larger the size of your package. All right. The SGN Generational Garbage Collector, I'm sorry, I must have had a little appear animation on that. That's only an option now in Visual Studio. It's on by default, leave it on, don't play with it. Xamarin Studio, they don't even allow you to play with it anymore. All right, a couple things that are out there. You can initially turn on a couple of those. Perform 32-bit floating operations at 64-bit, only really an issue to make you a little more compatible with .NET, and chances are, and how it handles floating point operations. And basically, unless you're running into a problem with floating point operations, you probably don't need to turn that on. A lot to turn off there. I don't want to go over all of these. I do want to leave a couple minutes for questions, because I have it. And that's pretty much it for my release options. So that's my Twitter handle. That's my blog. Please check it out. I'm speaking next month at Visual Studio. I'm giving a presentation on Xamarin and Android and using material design components in it. I'm doing one on comparing different mobile technologies. I'm doing one on Cordova and Taco. So hope to see you there. Thank you. Any questions in the audience?
So on Android, if you generate an APK per API per architecture, I think you're supposed to change the, each one should have a different version code. Is that correct?
The question is, if you actually change that, do you need a different version code? No, I don't believe so. And you can actually put them all in the store at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah. Apparently it's going there.
When you're using the obfuscation options like embedding DLLs, do you lose any of the information for crash reporting?
So the question is when you use the obfuscation options, do you lose information for crash reporting? And so the answer there would probably be yes. I haven't tried it out, but my guess would be yes.
Just related, do you lose any performance?
The question is, could you repeat
all
the
question? Related to the same question, do you lose performance?
So when I say obfuscate, I assume you're using their option to do it. And what their option is really doing is it's taking all your .NET code and basically converting it into basically using the NDK so it all becomes native code. So actually, from a performance perspective, it works pretty well.
Any experience with Mac in the cloud or building or remote building in cloud space?
So the question was, any experiments in working with Mac in the cloud? And the answer to that is no. It's a great question because especially after today's announcements, I'm suddenly very interested in Mac in the cloud because now, my Visual Studio developers can actually have the iOS devices connected to their PCs, right? And also, they can see the simulators on their own machines. So suddenly, Mac in the cloud is going to become very interesting. But if you remember my compile discussion around how using Visual Studio was about 100% slower than using Xamarin Studio, well, if you're just going over a local network, that's probably pretty bad. But if you're going over the internet, that's probably worse. And there's going to be some impact. I don't know what it is. I'm sure there will be, though.
Is there a quick way to check what can be file linked and what not without responding and testing the program over and over again?
I'm sorry, could you repeat
there are three options to link.
Yep. I think the question is if you're adding attributes in order to do preserving and linking, and you have to do testing, is there a quicker way to do that? And I assume you're, as a library developer, this is where that's really going to come in. And so, no, you do have to test, but you also have to understand to some extent how your code works. And what I mean by that is the only way your code is going to get linked away is if the linker determines that it's not being used. And so you have to be doing something in your code that's not easily able to be figured out by the linker. So this is how you determine where you need to preserve stuff. So if you're creating something through some kind of reflection where you're using something that will create an instance of it on the fly, where it actually can't be figured out by the linker, that one is a big candidate for saying, hey, this needs to stay around. So an example of that in Xamarin Forms world is there's no direct link that you're using any of those renderers. So a lot of those renderers, a lot of times, will get linked away. That was the problem on the Xamarin Labs Forms project. And so right away, you know, because there's no direct link to that code and you want it to stay around, that is something you want to put that linker preserve on, because you need that to be there. Does that make sense? All right, I think I'm done. Thank you very much, everyone.